function and balance.
It's helped to stimulate around the eyes.
Greatest and greatest wellness trends, treatments, and experience.
Magnesium is naturally found in foods like
This is the Well and Good podcast. Tune in to find the wellness that fits your frequency.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
If you thought the work from the Summer of Racial Reckoning, also known as 2020, was done, well, you thought wrong. Jacqueline Ogorchukwu-Iyama, a designer, writer, and cultural worker, is continuing the necessary work and facilitating conversations that create space for communities of color to heal from racism and white supremacy. I'm director of podcast Taylor Camille, and today we're diving into all of that and more with Jacqueline as we discuss her upcoming book, Racial Wellness. We talk about the origin story and explore why it's so necessary we have inclusive and comprehensive conversations about race, especially in the wellness space.
My name is Jacqueline Ogorchukwu-Iyama. I am a designer, a writer, a cultural worker, and my work centers on just sort of creating space for communities of color to heal from different systems of oppression, in particular racism and white supremacy.
Yeah, and I am very happy to be in conversation with you today as a consumer of your messages on social media, and very happy that your book, Racial Wellness, is coming out. I ordered my book. I had to have this physical kind of like piece of your mind, which I think is just so valuable. And I have found it, honestly, truthfully, so helpful to help me just come to have a visual, to have words for all the things that I don't know how to express, but I feel them. I know they're real. And it's just been almost like a marker of like, okay, I'm not alone. And so grateful for you and your work. And I wanted to know the origin story of this book, who it's for, and what you identified as missing in wellness conversations that you were like, I have to make this.
Absolutely. So I guess a little bit about my background. I studied social welfare, which was sort of a mixture between sociology and psychology, at least at the school that I went to. And so we were looking at a lot of the different ways in which different systems in society impact people's well-being holistically. That's when I sort of start to think more deeply about, even though like I was having conversations about race, thinking more deeply about like, how is this actually impacting people? Like, how is this traumatizing people? And I think what was also interesting is that like within the fields of psychology and like even social welfare, the dialogue around working with people of color doesn't really extend beyond this idea of like cultural competency. So it's just like, oh, like as a therapist or as a clinician or a practitioner, like you should be able to like work with like diverse groups of people, but it's not anti-racist. It's not decolonial. And so there were a lot of issues with that. I worked for a bunch of different organizations doing anti-oppression work, but as someone who was always really passionate about like design, creativity, I felt like I wasn't able to like use like, well, just play in design, but also like use design in ways that I thought were extremely powerful. I think that like art and design are an incredible way to sort of push for social change. And so I ended up studying design for my master's, and my thesis focused on like, what does it look like to design spaces for people of color who are dealing with mental health issues? And it was during that time where I really started to get deeper into the research around racial trauma and really just sort of like understanding that, you know, clinicians are not taught about racial trauma and what it looks like. And that creates this gap in resources for Black, Indigenous, and people of color who may be going to a therapist or a caseworker or a counselor or whatever it is to sort of process what they are experiencing. And also there's another layer where if you are meeting a counselor or a therapist who doesn't have lived experience or who hasn't done their own work around anti-racism, you can end up experiencing like racial gaslighting or just like experiencing more racism and trauma in that
more
setting.
Trauma than right. healing.
So there's a lot of like defensiveness and so it was just sort of like, I was like, okay, this is a conversation that really needs to be more public. A lot of it was happening in academia, but that's not really accessible. And so as someone who was like studying user experience design and interaction design, which focuses on like, how can you meet the needs of people? I really started to think about like, okay, let me start sort of speaking about these issues and like creating infographics and like using design to make this information accessible in the way that people feel like there's space being held for them. And so as I was doing that, there were a lot of people that were resonating with it. And like that made sense because those conversations weren't really happening in larger society. And so, yeah, that's sort of what started all of this.
Yeah. And so how would you describe what racial wellness is and why it's a necessary topic that we need to make room for? And also maybe even some of the process of like how you started putting together all these thoughts into a cohesive book.
Yeah, that's a good question. So racial wellness is essentially the different practices, either on individual, interpersonal, or institutional levels that we can weave into our lives to help us heal from racial trauma, but also like find ways to resist racism. And I think it's important and it's intentional in the sense that it needs to be holistic. Oftentimes when we have conversations about like healing from racism or other systems of oppression, a lot of times there's like individual techniques. And then sometimes it's just more of like, okay, here are the institutional or structural things that we can do. But I think that like true healing from something that is systemic needs systemic solutions. Like we really need to honor the whole person and communities. And so that's what racial wellness is to me. And then when it came to sort of putting the book together, there were definitely a lot of iterations in terms of like in terms of like what topics do I want to focus on? Because there's so much, there's so many different forms of racism. But as someone who like, I love trying to organize information in a way that I think is easily digestible for folks, it was important to sort of focus on like the ways in which racism impacts us emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally. And so the book is sort of divided into those categories so that it's easy for people to be like, okay, what do I want to focus on? Or like, how are these specific forms of racism impacting me, and able to sort of find the resources they need in relation to that. So there was definitely a lot of like thought and organization that went into.
I can tell. Yeah.
And that was, yeah, that was a process, yeah. But yeah. I hope that it's done in a way that like allows people to feel held, and also to mm-hmm. feel like it isn't like, to essentially like demystify like what healing could look like.
Yep. Yep. I think you do a great job of that. And I was transported in just, I think these are, it's such a big task. It's so, you know, it's such a large topic. It's so nuanced. There's so many overt and covert ways in which racism confronts us day in, day out. And to survive, we repress and we try to keep going. And our ancestors are our, you know, North Star of like, they dealt with more. Like, yeah. I can endure this. And it's just, it's almost not fair to the spirit to kind of like brush it under the rug. So grateful for, yeah, the space for reflection and the space for also you so kindly do at the end of chapters of just like, okay, rest.
Yeah.
Take it in what you just kind of like expunged.
Absolutely.
And before we just move on, like let's be present in this, because this is work. It's not just going to kind of happen all in one sitting. So
yeah.
Obviously intentional. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's super important. Also, like when we have these conversations about liberation and healing, is like you need moments of pause for it to be sustainable. like that, it's just so necessary. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make sure that was like infused into the process. So thank you for seeing mm-hmm. that, and I'm glad that resonated with you.
Yeah, because I think we're in these systems where it's like, okay, do the task, finish it, like done. And that's just not, that's not what this healing process looks like at all. Yeah, you mentioned the pillars that it's broken down in: emotional, mental, physical, spiritual, and then the interconnected. And I think, each section really allows generous space for exploration of the trauma. And even just in the first chapter, emotional, I think it was, and like immediately, like it was like racial apathy and all of, obviously in the season that we're in globally right now, I was like, oh my goodness, like Jacqueline, like this is the like syllabus for like what we're experiencing. And I'm just like, I'm the student, and I have words, I have language now to be like point to. And I think it's just going to be such a good resource for so many. But I guess I wanted to dig into why, it might be obvious, but why it was really important for you to focus on these five pillars.
Yeah. When I first started delving into this work around like racial trauma and racial healing, a lot of the research focused on, okay, like racism impacts us physically. And so it was mostly looking at like experiencing racism can cause high blood pressure and it can cause inflammation and all of these things, which is incredibly devastating. But as communities who have been dehumanized for centuries and also only just been viewed as like these physical bodies that like don't have emotions, don't have like spiritual needs, don't have mental needs, I wanted to push against that in the sense that like we are full beings, right? There's so many different parts of us, and there's so many different ways that we can experience harm. And so mm-hmm. that was really why I wanted to like include the conversation about like how racism impacts our physical health, but also speak to all these other ways that it impacts us that I think are often not mm-hmm. amplified enough. And I think mm-hmm. that in doing so, we are again sort of like pushing against this dehumanization that like we've experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Another descriptor you use in the book is, and I've seen you or I've heard you talk about it before, is referring to racism as a multifaceted abuser. And I just wondered kind of like how you got to that descriptor and how it's helped you just better convey, you know, an understanding of the impact racism has.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting within like social welfare and like within psychology or just like the wellness sphere in general. People have a really, for the most part, really good understanding of like what abuse looks like, at least like within romantic relationships or like within familial relationships. And like there's this understanding that abuse can be financial, it can be physical, it can be emotional, it could be all these different things. And so what I'm really trying to do and what I do with this book and with my work is for people who already have an understanding of like what abuse can look like in those areas, also being able to like see the symmetry in like how abuse can impact people who are experiencing it due to racism, because racism does impact folks financially and there's like so much inequity, and it does impact people physically and emotionally and in all of these ways. And I think like being able to like reframe racism as abuse and reframe like being racist as being abusive really allows people to think more deeply about the impact that it has on communities. And so that was very intentional because I feel like oftentimes when we talk about racism, like sometimes it feels like almost intangible to folks for some reason. And like I'm trying to like eliminate the cognitive dissonance. Like I'm really trying to just explain that like people get it and can get how harmful something like this can be, particularly if it's systemic and not just between people, but like between institutions and people.
No, I think you make really great points of it's almost unnecessary, because if not describing it that way, it's almost as if it's like, yeah, it's just, is it in the room or like, is it here? It just makes it almost like a mythical creature of sorts. Or it's like, no, this is a real thing. It's valid.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think language is like so, language is so powerful. Like language has the,
language is very powerful.
It can disempower, it can empower. And so just like, we need to get really clear on like the language and the frameworks that we're using to describe and explain concepts.
Yeah. And something that came to mind as you said that was just before we started this recording, I came across, obviously everyone is taking sides this past 2 weeks. And I'm sure into the future, it'll just, we'll continue to see divide. But I had seen something that was like, your joy is not important. And I was like gutted by that, because, and then I had like page back to your book, and it was like, your joy is really valid and it's very necessary in this healing also. Like if you can find pleasure, if you can find levity in all of this heaviness, like indulge. So I don't know, as you like were speaking, I was like, language is important. And I just felt like, who are you to say someone else's joy is unimportant? That might empower someone in another way. And of course, we're human beings and we have all these nuanced feelings. And I think we can have joy and rage at the same time. It's just kind of the balance of being human.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's definitely a conversation to be had around like how joy can sustain us, and how like joy is also a form of resistance. And so I think like, as we do this work, like as we try to heal from systems of oppression, just sort of like recognizing that like there's so many different things that healing can look like. And again, like as you mentioned, like because we are human and because we have all these different emotions, allowing ourselves to like lean in and tap into that is incredibly important. Yeah. I feel like, again, these last 2 weeks have been,
it's been a lot.
It's been a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It obviously is like, I think for many Black people and people of color, it is hearkening back to 2020 and to Black Box Summer and to like all the performative activism we saw. And I think that's also just another added thing is like, we don't know how we want to show up this time, and we're reassessing like the ways in which we did show up and what is serving us, whether that be publicly or kind of in our own or doing our own research and then, you know, sharing what we've learned. But I remember the Black Box Summer of 22. It's come, it's gone, but I'm like, there will always be a movement or something. And I wondered how you hope this text will continue to kind of do the work to maintain the momentum necessary for healing and for discovery through so many of these moments.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So you kind of mentioned, I think earlier on in this conversation, like this text is like a syllabus.
Yeah, it is.
and like that's how I've been sort of like also viewing it as like, yeah, like a syllabus, like a playbook to be able to understand like these very foundational and like repetitive strategies that are used by, you know, a white supremacist culture. And I think what's helpful about being able to map out these tactics is that once you get the playbook and like once you get the tactics, it's easy to see how it plays out in other situations. whether that's, yeah, like you're, it just makes it that much easier. And so I'm like, I don't even know what the word would be, but I'm just, there's this like feeling I have within myself of like empowerment and like also excitement for people to be able to have this book, because I think it'll really, really help people be able to like recognize these patterns and recognize these systems and these strategies and like push back against that. And that's really what's needed, is because like systems of oppression are manipulative, they're manipulative like for a reason. They're manipulative so that we are unaware of all of the ways in which they try to disempower us. And so being able to like open the blinds to that, I think is incredibly powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just like thinking about that analogy, opening the blinds. Yeah, it's true. You do a lot of work. You do a lot of sharing. You do a lot of distilling. And I just have to wonder, how do you decompress? How do you unplug from doing all this work and then remember to pour into yourself and reflect on your own emotional, physical, spiritual, mental needs?
Yeah, this was so, yeah, summer 2020 was a test for sure, because it was like I had been talking about like these issues and like doing work on these issues, and then like suddenly there was like an influx of people who just like had all these thoughts. Some of them were like, oh, this really resonates with me. And then there were also some people who were just trying to like push back against that, the resistance and like the healing of communities of color. And I feel like that was what, like, I thought I knew about boundaries, but that was like really a test. I was like, it was like, let's see how good you are at actually sort of like fulfilling these boundaries. And so I think like I really, really learned about like, not everything has to be an argument, because to me, like, that is also a distraction. That is also a deflection. That is also a manipulation tactic. Sometimes you need to turn off your comments. Sometimes you just like don't need to engage with people who are, you know, trying to push against like basic human rights. Like there are certain things that you don't need to like pour your energy into. And it can be really hard. Yeah, it can be really difficult, but like I've just learned, like, listen, whoever this message needs to reach, it will reach them.
Yeah.
You know, people can only meet you as far as they met themselves. And a lot of people have not done the work. So there are a lot of boundaries that I set. But, like, even beyond that, like, in my personal life, I kind of what you mentioned about joy, like, I love to try to make space for play, whether that's just like laying in the grass or like, you know, playing with my cat or whatever it may be. Like, yeah. I'm very intentional about just like infusing play into my life, infusing rest into my life. And it's not always easy to balance the things. And there's definitely moments where I'm like, you know what, even with all this, I'm still burnt out. But yeah, that's also like the nature of living in an exploitative society, is that like, it's hard, and it's hard on purpose. So yeah, I think just like trying to do what I can do, whether that's journaling or being in nature or being playful, gathering with community is something that like really heals me as well. And so those are things that I try to do to sustain myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not always easy.
Yeah, it is not always. No, it's not. But touching grass is very important.
100%.
Playing with your cats are very, very important things. Yeah, it is hard. It is hard to step away. It is hard, especially when it's like we have so much access to each other, but it's like, okay, how are we using this access intentionally? And yeah, it is hard, but I'm glad we all try. Just try.
Yeah, trying our best.
Yeah. I guess the question I really wanted to end on, and I don't know, it's kind of a big one, but I would be interested to know, kind of almost even in a dream world, dream reality, what, you know, your hope for wellness spaces, inclusive wellness spaces look like. And I mean, not even like how we get there, but just like, yeah, what in your mind's eye does like inclusive wellness spaces look like?
That is a tough question. But I think for me, it's being able to really center the needs of those that are systemically impacted by oppression, and being able to like really have an intersectional lens when we're thinking about wellness. I think that's what's missing. People are creating these spaces and they're not thinking about like the intersections of identities, and they're not really necessarily thinking beyond themselves. And so being able to like create a space where you're thinking about how different identities intersect, like what are the pain points? What are the experiences that different people are having? And like also like understanding how that impacts their well-being. I think that is the key to really being able to create spaces that people feel like seen and feel held and feel like they can like truly heal. Because to me, without that sort of intersectional framework in anything we do, to be honest, I don't think the solutions that we come out with are going to be truthful and inclusive. So yeah, that's what I would say. And I really hope that we start to see more of that.
Yeah. Yeah. There was even just like a piece in your book where you were like, this is not even wellness space, but the fact that people in power think that like white colleagues and like people of color colleagues need to attend the same kind of DEI training is absurd. Right. And it's just like little ways that our society has functioned even outside of wellness spaces, that it's like, get a clue. Like the needs are different for these two parties of people. And so, yeah, I hope that there is more intentionality in our future.
Absolutely. For sure. Absolutely. And like that, what you just mentioned again, like goes back to this idea of like racism as a form of abuse, because if you had two groups of people where someone was like the abuser or benefiting from the abuse in some way, and then another group is the group that is being abused, let's say it had nothing to do with race, I feel like people would have like a pretty good understanding, like, oh, these people need different
things. They would be shocked. They would be shocked. Yeah. They need to be in separate rooms. Need separate attention. Right? Yeah.
And so, there's a huge gap in understanding. And I hope we can begin to sort of reframe that.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
On today's show, you heard me in conversation with Jacqueline Ogorchukwu Iyama. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share. This episode was produced by Taylor Camille and edited by our friends at Edit Audio. Our theme music was created by Madeline Lekomsky and Matt DiDomenico. Our show art was designed by Jenna Gibson and Karina Masonette.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.